Good evening, everyone. My name is Ross Lally. I am Chair of the Finance Committee. And tonight, we're having a public hearing. I'm gonna read the call to the public hearing. So I'll call the meeting to order at 7:15. And a public hearing on the proposed budget for the town of Bolton for fiscal year beginning July 1, 2024, will be held Tuesday, April 30th, 2024, at 7:15 at the Town Hall at 222 Bolton Center Road in Bolton, Connecticut, and also on Zoom. And copies of our proposed budget are available for inspection, you know, at the town clerk's office. And we also have them here, and they are available online. So I just want to welcome everybody. And for the way we're going to do things tonight is I will start things off and give a summary of the budget. And then we will open up the floor for public comment. So let me just get started and just thank everybody for being here, both on Zoom and in person. It's one of the most important things that folks can do is to participate in our budget process. And I really want to thank all of you for being here. And I hope to see as many of you as possible at the polls voting. And again, it's just really important that everybody votes so that we all know what, the more people who vote, the better an idea we have of what direction the town truly wants to go. And so I can't stress that, you know, more than enough, the importance of voting. So let me just give a quick summary of the budget process and how it, the budget and how it works. And basically, when we're putting together a town budget, there's several different components to it. One is the goods and services provided by the town, by the Board of Selectmen and the Board of Education. Then that's what your expenses are. And then we have income that comes from government grants, that comes from fees that we do for building inspections, for trash, you know, for going to the transfer station, and you know, various other incomes such as tax, you know, the interest on the taxes that we have collected. So that is all of our income. And when you subtract the expenses from the income, there's a certain amount that's left. And that's what we have to collect in taxes from individuals. So that's at really a high level. The taxes that we collect, you know, that are either real estate or personal property taxes are dependent on what's, you know, what's left from the other income after expenses. So this year, the Board of Finance is proposing a budget that is basically tax revenue neutral. That means we're not going to be asking for any more dollars in taxes than we collected last year. And whether that translates into an increase in your taxes or not really depends on the reassessment that we just went through. The average increase in property assessment was about, I think, 29%. And if your property's increased by more than 29%, you will be paying some amount more depending on how much more. If your property did not increase by the 29%, then you will be paying less. But overall, the amount of money that we're collecting in taxes is slightly less than last year, mostly because, you know, we had better returns on, you know, our investments and other sources of income. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I'm gonna go through our budget presentation. I'm not gonna read the whole thing. I'm going to just, you know, go through it, and the key things that you're interested in, our total budget on this first page here is $26,223,999. And the proposed property tax mill rate is 33.41, and the proposed motor vehicle tax rate is 32.46, and the motor vehicle tax rate is capped, you know, by the state. So we can move on to the next, you know, slide. And this is budget, as we said, represents a total of, you know, again, $26,223,999, or a 5.6 62% increase. And again, we're able to not pass that increase on to you because of the, you know, improvements in the revenue that we've had. So the proposed budget, I'll just go a little bit into the background of it. Nope, don't go there yet. It's basically both the Board of Selectmen and the Board of Education proposed, you know, an initial request. And each of them reduced that request. So you look at the Board of Education's request went down from 4.97 increase to 3.52 increase. And the Board of Selectmen reduced their budget request from 5.67 to 4.85. And again, you know, this just again represents how we do this. So it's not just like the first wash comes and that's what we do. We really take a close look at this. And if you look at the primary drivers of why we had to increase the budget, it's really a large part of that is contractual obligations. It is also some of the costs mandated by special education. We don't have any choice in that. It's just, it's a state federal mandate. We have increased costs of professional and technical services, basically for our IT vendors and services. And this was necessary in order to make sure that we are secure from cyber threats, because if we are not and don't demonstrate that we're making a good effort at security, we can't, you know, get coverage for cyber, you know, security incidents. And the other thing that really drove this is also early voting. Again, that's another mandate by the state. And refuse collection, again, this is another thing we do not have control over. There's limited numbers of services that provide refuse collection. And the other thing is just we had an intern that we're getting for the finance department to help with the various duties that the director has been doing so that we can do some other efficiencies. And we also increased our capital budget for the next 5 to 10 years, because again, we have a lot of buildings in town. We have the schools, we have the fire department, we have the town hall, and all of those need to be maintained. So you're going to see, you have roof replacement for Bolton Center School. There's repairs to a bridge in town. We have, again, for Bolton Center School, the air handlers and air condition replacement and so forth. And the other thing that we're trying to do is find a long-term solution for the town hall and community space and more. So again, that's kind of where, you know, the increases are coming from. If you want to split, let's go to the next slide, sorry. And again, this just shows in general what the expenses look like in the revenues. And if you look at it, town proper, which is really the Board of Selectmen's budget, is about $7,100,000. Board of Education is $16,000,000, about, you know, $650,000 more or less. And then there's a couple of small wedges up there on the right, and those are really shared expenses between the Board of Education. We have our capital budget, and as I mentioned, some of that goes to the schools, some of that goes to Board of Selectmen's, you know, budget. We also have debt service because we take out loans to do some of these long-term, you know, initiatives that are large expenditures, and we have to pay the, you know, the interest on those. And also we are having a contingency fund for, you know, unexpected emergencies that come up in the town, and this, we've increased that to $100,000 this year. And if you go down to the bottom of that slide, you can see that we have proposed, you know, proposed revenues. And again, chunk of it comes from, you know, taxation of one kind or another. And the rest is we had a good amount of surplus that also from previous years. And that surplus from previous years happens because selectmen budget a certain amount of money and they can't spend revenue. They can't spend revenue that, you know, other than what is called for in their budget. So if the budget, let's say, is hypothetically $1 million and you get $1.5 million in, they can't spend that money. And that becomes, you know, part of the surplus that gets carried over to the next year. So that's all of those little slices in there. This is really just showing where the money, the various monies for the town come from. So, go to the next one. And again, this is really just showing how the Board of Education and the Board of Selectmen budgets break down. And you can see a lot of it is, you know, in both cases, there's a lot of it, it's a chunk of it is for salaries. It's smaller for the Board of Selectmen than it is for the Board of Education, but those are a big driver. So each of the budgets is driven, you know, has different drivers to it. And we're gonna cover those later if you have any questions about them. Again, I just wanna make sure you get an idea, just at a high level, what, you know, the budget looks like and where it comes from, and then we can get into some of this more when we start doing the public comment. Go to the next one. And again, this is just showing where the primary increases for the Board of Education come from. On the left, as you can see, the main driver is salaries and benefits. These are contractually driven. We did get a little break in insurance for both the Board of Education and the Board of Selectmen. So that is also, doesn't show in here, but we did get a break on that from our insurer. And special education, again, that is something that is mandated and the schools do not have any control over that. And then you have the usual for operational services, admin, and so forth. And Board of Education increases by town, as you can see. It's kind of hard to compare apples to oranges, these apples to apples here, because these towns are all different sizes. Some of them, you know, may participate more in regional schools than we do. And so you wind up with Bolton as about a 3.5% increase in the Board of Education's budget. So you can see it's on the lower end of these other towns. And again, they're not 100% apples to apples comparisons. We can go to the next slide. And here we have the main drivers for the Board of Selectmen's budget. Again, we have refuse costs. We don't really have any control over that. There are very few options in the state. The only other option you would have is for us to stop picking up the, you know, stop the garbage collections, and you would have to, as individuals, contract with a private service, and it tends to be more than what the town, you know, what the town would charge, you know, for the same work. Elections, again, this all comes from early voting. And just as folks are aware, for the primaries, presidential primaries we have this year, 4 days were required. The state elections are coming up. It's 10 days, the primaries in August. Those are 10 days mandated for early voting. And for the presidential elections in November, it's 14 days. And the cost per day runs about $1,500 for the required staffing for the state. So again, we don't have control over that. The state requires that we have to do it. They did provide a small amount of money, $10,500, to offset early voting expenses, but as you can see, that's a fraction of what our needs are. Then we have administrative, you know, the administration, fire commission, finance department, and so forth. But again, the main drivers are up at the top, those first two items. We go next one. And again, this is where we're talking about the revaluation that we went through recently. And there was, as we said, a substantial increase in property values. And what we do, because the property values went up, your mill rate goes down to, because we don't need to charge as much in, you know, mills to get the same amount of income, basically, because the value of your properties are higher. And some of the examples that we give, a property with an assessed value of $300,000 with a 40, you know, mill rate would pay $12,000 in taxes. So again, this is just an example here, because a mill is really just $1 in property tax per $1,000 of a property's assessed value. So this will let you do the math to see, you know, approximately with our proposed mill rate, what you would pay for your house based on the assessment that was made earlier this year. And Again, these are just really just examples of what the mill rate, you know, impact would be. And on average, you can see that's a slight decrease for motor vehicles and for real property both. And again, that's on average, but nobody is average. So some people will pay a little, will pay the same they did last year. Some will pay a little bit more and some will pay a little bit less. It's just the way it works and we don't have control over that in a free market economy like this. The value of your house is based on just who really wants to buy it and how much they're willing to pay for it. Go to the next one. And this is really just sort of what we're going to be doing next. So our budget, as it says on here, is our best estimate of projected expenditures and revenue based on historical knowledge. And after we listen to you folks tonight, we'll take that input into account. We're going to have a special meeting right afterwards to conduct other business, but we also will discuss, you know, the input that we received from you folks tonight. And we also will have updates as we go along between this hearing and the first budget referendum, hopefully first and only, we shall see. But that's on May 21st, and there's going to be new information that comes in to help us refine, you know, our, you know, projected revenues and expenses. So budget is not set in stone at this, you know, at this moment. It can and most likely will change between now and what goes to, you know, to the referendum. And if the budget fails at the referendum, the finance committee is required by town charter to reduce the budget. It's just the way the charter reads. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you vote on the budget. If you want it to go down, you know, then vote against it. And if you want it to go up, it's the same thing. Then you stay as it is, rather, please just, you know, vote for it. So again, it really, what happens is really up to the voters, you know, how many people turn out to say yes and how many people turn out to say no. And again, I'm just encouraging everybody to please come out and vote, regardless of which way you feel about the budget. And if the budget does fail, Board of Selectmen and again the Finance Committee, which consists of the Board of Selectmen, the Board of Education, and three members elected at large, will, you know, take into that account and figure out what to do, you know, to reduce the budget appropriately. And again, we don't have line item veto power, so it would really be, you know, the team would come up with, you know, suggested reduction, you know, reductions for Board of Education and the Board of Selectmen, and those two parties would be required to figure out where those reductions, you know, occur within their budgets. And then down below, it's just as more of a point of interest, it's about $4,200 every time we do a referendum. And that covers the cost of paying for poll workers, paying for ballots, in a cleanup of the setup and take down afterwards, because it's all done by town employees. You go next, or is that it? And then this is just the mill rate, you know, the mill rate calculations. And again, I'm not going to go through all the details of it because I know you're mostly just interested in, you know, what it is. And so the proposed mill rate at this point is 33.41. So it is a reduction from last year by about 10.41 mil, and that takes into account the fact that, you know, properties went up in general in value. And that is it for me. So I will now open the public hearing up to public comment. And what I would ask you folks to do is, when you have a comment, if you're online, I will keep an eye out for you raising your hand online. And if you are in the room, I would ask you to please come up to the podium. And whether you're online or in person, I would ask that when you present, to please keep it brief and to please make sure you identify, you know, yourself so that we can enter that into the record. So I'm ready for comments, and so is the rest of the committee. Yes, sir.
Jim Pendergrass, 122 West Street. I'm curious about the surplus. Looks like it's been carried over $2.3 million.
Yeah.
So that seems like a pretty big number. Is that typical? Do we always have that kind of number?
No, this is like a one-time occasion.
And where did it come from?
It comes from, again, when I will let the, you know, various other members speak to it, but it basically comes from, like I said before, we project a budget, we project expenditures, and you can only spend what you budgeted for. So the revenue happens to be, you know, more than you anticipated.
Yeah, I understand, but I mean, specifically, is it like all from the school budget, or is it all from the town budget?
I can give those details. It's from three different sources. So there's money that's being given back from the prior fiscal year that wasn't spent. There's money that is included because we adjusted revenue for this year, and so obviously we can't spend that revenue this year, so we're carrying it over into next year. And then it's givebacks from this current year, of which $350,000 is coming from the Board of Ed. So we've got about $895,000 from the revised revenues, $350,000 from the Board of Ed, and around $1.2 million from FY23's surplus.
Now, with that, if I may, part of that is another $500,000, which is monies that we're able to invest, and with the interest rates as high as they were, and last year, the only amount, no one knew what it was going to be, and the previous board didn't account for very little, so we ended up with an additional $500,000 that can be put towards this budget.
But I'm wondering.
And if I could also add, if I could just, I'm sorry, about the Board of Ed. The reason for the fact that we are able to give monies from this year's budget towards next year's is because we have had unfilled positions throughout the course of this year. So the excess monies that we have now are because of positions that we have not been able to fill, because there is a shortage in filling education positions.
My ultimate question then is,
yeah,
why wouldn't something like this, does it go to pay down debt? It seems like at a time like this, when things are difficult in this part of Connecticut, or maybe in all of Connecticut, I don't know, that you wouldn't want to be carrying so much debt as these amounts of debt roll over. We just seem to keep the same amount or a larger amount going. And it would be a nice time to use a big figure, 10% of the budget almost, to pay down that kind of thing.
And
is that some use of it?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And our debt's actually not going up. It's gradually reducing as we pay off the existing loans, and we're waiting to pay them off before we take on any other significant expenses. What we did do with some of the surplus that we had was to put it into the capital budget. And we're going to talk about more of that in the special meeting, but we have to apply it to future improvements to the town hall and to public spaces, you know, public meeting places. And again, we're doing that because we got the money now. It's to your point, though. We're going to put it away. You know, it will be assigned to a line item in the capital budget, and it will gather interest while it's there and before we use it. But again, it's like we have the surplus now, let's use it so that next year, if it's not like this and we need that money to cover things, we're not asking you for it because we've already put it into the budget. So that is some of that planning ahead. Ms. Bob.
Just to follow up, if I might, on Bob Moore's comment, the interest that we earned on the deposits of our tax dollars with the bank went up, as he mentioned, from $15,000, which is what we had in their budget, to just about $500,000. Year's not over yet, so we don't know exactly what that number is. But it also has a follow-on positive in this year's budget, to the extent that we can budget almost, you know, it's a little bit of a guess, I'm not sure if I missed the last meeting, but we're looking at about $460,000 estimate of interest income that 2 years ago really didn't exist.
But the other side of that will be, when you roll over the debt, you're going to be paying much more interest on bonds, aren't you?
We don't really typically roll over debt, but we do take out more an additional loan, and keeping pretty much, I've been on this board for, like, I don't know how long, but it's been a long time, but we pretty much kind of keep the debt level pretty even, and we've long had a severe demand for new town hall. If you ever want to visit the offices that we've been using, you understand why. And so preliminary stuff has been done. There's money being put aside for a couple of years now for the demolition of the old Notch Road building. And we need to replace that with some office space to accommodate staff in an appropriate manner, which doesn't exist presently.
Thank you.
Bob Moore?
I'd be asking a similar question. And a few things you should know. Some of our debt is at 2% interest rate. Some are at 3, 3.5. So the interest we're paying is a considerably small amount versus the capital. We're in a position now where the board members indicated, we're putting funds in a capital budget, a good chunk of that surplus in that category. And this thing just carries, it's like a savings account that will yield dollars until it is needed, so that instead of putting it into your operating budget, which you don't want to do, because this is just a one-time there. So next year, that $400,000 is not an expense. It's not an increase in your budget that you're carrying forward. Those are things that next year will make trying to maintain a level budget easier.
Yeah, and you make a good point about it too, with our debt being about, charging about 2 or 3% interest. It makes more sense to put savings aside and get the interest on them than to pay off the loans, because money in the bank is paying a higher interest rate than the loans are charging.
And the likelihood of us paying a high interest rate on additional loan to support the construction of new town offices would be much higher than what we have. I mean, we're paying that box at 2 or 3% and stuff.
That'll be a 2 or 3% too, you think?
Oh, I know. Well, it's right now. I mean, interest rates are considerably higher than
construction loans.
But having our ability to use cash to offset a significant portion of those expenses will decrease our interest expense.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your questions.
Any other questions in the room? I don't see any hands raised online.
Hi, Scott Machado, 29 Green Hills Road. So the money that's being given back for the surplus is about $1.2 million from the budget from last year?
Correct.
And last year we had an increase of $1.4 million in the budget spending, about 6%. Which caused our mill rate to go up 10%. Is that not correct? Last year we had a 10% increase, is that not correct?
A couple years ago, many years ago.
10% increase maybe in the mill rate, but it was only a 5-point-something increase in the overall
correct.
Budget.
Yeah. But our taxes went up because the mill rate went up 10%, so our taxes went up 10%.
Right.
So it was a $1.4 million, but we have a $1.2 million coming back.
Oh, so your taxes did not go up 10%.
Mine did.
Yours might have, mm-hmm. but overall, no.
Did the mill rate go up 10%?
I would have to pull up.
I don't have that number.
Well, let's go and check, because with the value staying even until we have the assessment, if the mill rate went up 10%, then everybody, to your point, would pay 10%.
Pay 10% more.
So let's just go check on the numbers.
Oh, I can give you the numbers, but...
Yeah.
It wasn't?
The mill rate didn't increase 10%.
No.
It was 39.99%. The prior year, and last year it went up to 43.82.
And what's that increase?
About 4%.
Yeah.
4%.
Percentage points. Right,
6. It was a 9.5% increase.
Yeah.
But it was a 3.83. Mill. We went up 3.83 mills.
I think 9.5% is a significant increase. Is that correct?
We all pay
that increase based on
question. Yes.
Huh?
No question.
Absolutely.
No,
I think that's why maybe some things happened where people wanted to have some different people in the position, and why the elections went the way that they did last year. So if 1.2 million of the 1.4 million increase is a surplus, from the budget from last year. It almost seemed like that wasn't really necessary to do. Understanding, of course, that there were unfilled positions and stuff like that. We are increasing the budget another $1.4 million. So we are definitely increasing the budget. I understand what you're saying about capital improvements and stuff like that. But that's a pretty big increase. Next year, when we do it, I think you referred to in your last meeting that we might have to have a sizable increase in the mill rate next year because of the expenses that we have.
Well, actually, what we talked about next year was trying to keep the, what we're trying to do is not whipsaw the mill rates and your taxes back and up and down. We're trying to hold them, you know, level. So one year you're not paying a lot less, one year you're not paying a lot more, because it's very hard for you to budget personally and try to, you know, figure out what to do financially if we're constantly, you know, doing, you know, this, you know, up and down.
Well, historically, we've only increased the budget a few percent every year at most.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be a whipsaw kind of situation.
No, I'm talking about the mill rates.
But this revenue, right, but the revenue that we had as a surplus will not be available next year, which means that that will have to be kind of accommodated for.
Well,
I guess, go ahead, sorry.
No, part of what's being carried forward is that portion will be actually reduced in the budget, because it what you put in capital, an extra in capital, that amount is over and above what normally would be put into capital. So that I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. It's a one-time deal. It's there. The other thing that, you know, when we're looking at and trying to plan ahead for next year, and I think it was what we put aside for emergency funds, and that's a trick. Yeah, I mean, in that you don't know what can happen. If we are frugal and well, there's another sizable amount of money that, again, can be used to offset before you even start. The one thing we won't have, and I concur, is that this large surplus carryover. That was an extraordinary amount. But part of at least my thoughts, and I think members of the board, was try and structure how we do things. So next year we would not need that, you know, that massive amount of surplus to go forward.
Well, basically, we put that $400,000 into the capital budget.
Right.
That's not going to be spent this fiscal year. It's intended for the future, so we won't need to ask for it.
Well, yeah, that's a one-time ask. And I think, I can't speak for all the members of the board, but a lot of us, we're still recovering, as I am, from last year's tax increase. I mean, I'm no different than anybody else, my feeling is we're able to maintain this level this year. I see no reason why we can't be somewhere in this range next year. Can't promise zero, but I don't think we should be in a situation where we should be raising taxes at any significant rate. We can't afford it. My opinion.
Yes, Amanda.
From the Board of Selectmen side, excuse me, which is the board I sit on, I can say that the drivers that you see in this year's budget that are increasing, right, the waste, the early voting, the IT stuff, we're not, hopefully not going to see increases like that next year. We are into a locked contract for the refuse, which has capped, you know, increases each year. Early voting, since we've got that in the budget now, should be the same next year. IT services, again, we finally have, you know, locked in contracts that have known incremental increases year over year. And so hopefully some of those big drivers on the Board of Selectmen side will not see that next year. Now, we can't make any promises about what's going to happen, but at least on the Board of Selectmen side, you know, we can say that much. On the Board of Ed side, which Kristen could speak to more, but it's primarily contractual increases and so union increases, and so we also kind of have an anticipation of what at least that expense would be next year.
And to the point,
and not 5%.
I was just saying, to the point about this year with elections, there were two wins to it. One was the state mandate for early voting, and the other is that we're having four elections this year, you know, including the referendum. We had the presidential preference primary, you know, in April. We have one or more referenda coming up. We have primaries again in August, and, you know, the presidential election in November. So next year, there's only going to be at the most two sets of elections. There's not going to be four, so that ask will go down for the, you know, for the registrars for voting. So some of this is cyclical too, so we have to just keep that in mind too, because I know the voting is. So you'll get another increase in the, you know, like the voting budget, elections budget in 4 years, because we'll be back where we are now with four elections in 1 year. Mr. Monroe.
Yes, Scott, yeah, thank you for your interest and your questions. One thing I'm hopefully you've already considered is you can appeal your assessment.
Has that already passed?
Yes.
You can't appeal it anymore.
You lost your window to appeal?
Well, had I known that, I mean, so my
You can appeal every year.
And I think everyone in town should do that.
Yeah.
Because my house, which is the same, my house is the exact same it was 5 years ago. There's been no improvements to it. But my house has gone up 45%, which means my taxes with the mill rate is going to go up 10.5%.
Yeah.
I think you spoke about your assessment as being 167 to 250. It's going up 14%.
Yep.
Now, that's more than was increased last year. So if anyone's upset about the increase that happened last year, people should be really upset, not everybody, that their taxes are going up this year. And I hope people are looking and finding out how much more they're actually going to be paying.
I think we had a total reduction in the grand list. Was it 275,000, something like that? Is it in that range, I think? Was it that much?
Oh, as a result of the assessment appeal?
As a result of
the appeal, we don't have that number.
No.
Wasn't that significant?
Yeah. It's unfortunate that the budget doesn't come out until after that closes, because had I know, I mean, I kind of assumed that it would be somewhat relative. If my house went up in 45% in value and yours went up 50%, I think 30%, is that really what everyone's house went up in value? That's a lot of research.
It was an average, obviously.
I understand the average.
And nobody's the average.
Anecdotally.
But you also said that a little bit more. Some people might pay a little bit more, but I'm going to be paying a lot more, and you're going to be paying a lot more because of your assessment.
Yeah.
Had I known that this was an issue, I mean, I think everyone should appeal, as you know, I just said, but that's too late now. And so I can't appeal this until when?
Next year.
Next year.
And next February, you can appeal your taxes every year, February, every year.
And is it based on that year? So if the house prices go up?
The value is based on the base year. The value is based on October 1, 2023. So everything's retrospective as far as your value. So when you go in to appeal your value, what you're appealing is what your house was worth on the open market on October 1, 2023, which was last year. Last October. That's the base year. So for 5 years, that's the number that your taxes are based on. So if you feel yours are assessed too high, it behooves you to appeal.
And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. The other thing that I'm concerned about is the presentation shows all these different examples, and everyone's getting based on that average. But it looks to a regular person who maybe doesn't understand the math that everyone's going to have a little bit of a cut. But that's not true, and I hope people are aware of the fact that there are a lot of people in this town that are going to have a significant increase. So you can vote for this budget, which is a 5.7% increase in spending, a $1.4 million increase in spending. But when they get their tax bill, they might be shocked thinking that they're only going to have a little bit of an increase, when many people may have a much higher increase than it was last year, which, as many people have said, was very difficult to swallow.
I just do want to clarify that chart in the back is based on the average increase, right? So if you look at that chart, there's two rows, your valuation, excuse me, what a valuation would have been in last year and what a valuation would be this year if you had that 29% average, right? So that we can't give you a chart for what your exact increase would be. So I apologize if that seems misleading. It was done as the best we could as a proxy for, you know, using an average as a proxy for what most people would experience. But I do want to clarify that's what it, that
people
we use the average.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anecdotally, I think, and I don't know, maybe Bob Moore could comment on this, but I think what I've heard a bit of it makes, and it makes some sense, is that homes with one floor seem to have, the demand for those types of homes is increased far more than two-story. So two-story houses are probably going to be part of that average that brings stuff down?
I live in a two-story house.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So.
I heard the same.
Maybe right for the appeal.
Well, I guess I have to wait till next year, but it'd be nice if somehow that was allowed when we find out what the budget is. Because I'm assuming that the company that came to do the evaluations of the houses did a decent job. And then when I looked at what my evaluation in, it made sense based on what I saw in Zillow and, you know, all the different, you know, online. I mean, I don't know, I'm not gonna have my house assessed and pay for that. But I'm not gonna find out about that until I see what the mill rate is and what it is. Because I'm assuming everybody kind of was moving somewhat steadily. It certainly isn't a little increase. So some people are facing huge increases this year.
It's 7 years ago when we had, you know, the other last eval. We did not come back anywhere near the extent that other towns did, compared to, you know, the real severe decrease in property value we incurred like in 2018.
I wasn't on this board.
I think we went down in 2013.
Further back, we really went down significantly. And our houses were being assessed at a much lower assessment value than I think they were actually worth. And I've been in this town for over 40 years, so that's just my personal thought.
Yeah, it's also just to clarify with my own house. When I purchased it in 2010, I spent $204,000 on it, and I thought that was the low point, and then it dropped after that down to about $167,000. So now it's come back. So it helps.
Congratulations, you get a nice big tax increase.
Yeah, I know. That's name your poison though, because it's like, you know, it's good for selling. It's not good for, you know, if you expect to stay here for a while, you wind up paying more taxes like I am, and apparently you.
I'm sure other people. I just hope that people will look at what that mill rate does with their assessment and compare it to what they paid last year.
Yep.
And that's important that people do look at it based upon what a projected mill rate is, because it's going to affect it.
Yeah, and
not
that everyone's getting a cut and that kind of stuff, because that's what it looks like.
It's what the math says, you know, your mill rate versus, because
I'm a math teacher and a lot of people don't like math.
Well,
so I know a lot of people don't do the math and they trust the people that they elect to represent them and do right by them. And as you said, we deserve it. You know, we.
Oh no, I.
You know, we were there. You did say that in the thing, in the last call that you had. So, you know, that this is the right thing to do, you know, for our taxpayers. But this is not a tax cut for everybody.
Well, correct.
And I'm not talking about just a couple people. It's not just me and the finance chair.
Which is why when we started, I tried to say that it was revenue neutral as opposed to a tax reduction.
Yeah, it's plays of words. And if people aren't paying attention to the words, it can be misleading.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping anyone who's listening tonight and everyone's here, like really look at what it is, because it is not. We're approving $1.4 million additional dollars for next year on top of $1.4 last year, where we're getting $1.2 of that back. But that tax rate is staying. It's not going anywhere. It's staying where it is. And that's not cool. So thank you.
Thank you. And I'm looking online, I do not see any hands raised. Anybody here? I can't.
No.
If you're behind the podium, I can't see if there's anybody here.
No, I thought someone stood up. I'm sorry.
No, we got a hand raised now. Okay. So, Tatiana and David, if you want to unmute yourselves.
Yes. Okay. Yes, hello. Hi, this is Dave Keating. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
We live at 17 Brandy Street, and we just moved into town. And I know there's 169 towns in Connecticut. I've lived in four or five of them. And Bolton is one that collects all the tax in one payment, where 168 towns collect it in two payments. So is there a reason for that in Bolton? And thank you.
So we've actually, this was raised recently by a member of the public, and it was discussed. So one of the primary reasons why it's one is due to the increased cost of doing two different tax collections. Plus, when we get the money in one in one fell swoop, it all goes into that bank account, which is what Bob and Bob were talking about earlier, that is earning that large amount of interest, which is driving our increased revenue. If we had taxes in two different pools, we would not have that threshold of income in the bank, and therefore would either, one, not meet the threshold we need to have that increased interest percentage, or to just earn a significantly decreased amount because the base we're earning it against is lower.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions from in the room or online?
Cheryl, you can go to your Keene Drive. On the Board of Education, I noticed that if I'm reading this correctly, we now have approximately 694 students in the whole school system. Is that correct?
That's Kristen Heck. This is a question for you.
I'm pulling up my number, Cheryl. Give me one second.
Sure, Kristen.
Page 12 of your budget packet, not the presentation, if anybody is interested.
Yeah, that's.
That's what she's got.
I'm gonna go with Cheryl's right. It's taking forever for it to open up for me. I'm sorry, I'm at home. I just had back surgery. I apologize.
Directionally, very.
How you doing?
That's right. Close enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little less than 7.
Okay, and I see that the is a major decrease in the amount of students over the last few years. But yet the ask for money is still increasing. So we have less Columbia students, so it's costing us more per student. And I'm just curious as to how long we're going to be able to maintain that as a town.
This is a good question.
So I'll let Kristen fill in the gaps, but
I can hear you.
I'll let Kristen fill in the gaps where, you know, I misspeak, but the big picture is it's contractual wages and salaries. We don't have enough where we can drastically reduce the number of teachers. We still have students that we need to service, but, you know, a lot of it is driven by union negotiated salaries. And
yeah, but we also, Kristen also said there were less staff. You had fewer staff people.
Hence
so you were able to give some money back.
Correct.
Yeah, well, not that we didn't need those staff, Cheryl.
As a town, how are we going to keep maintaining the, we have a wonderful school system, and how are we going to keep maintaining that when we have less students and the amount of money that we spend per student is increasing? That's my question, anyway.
And I think it's one we can't answer tonight, but it's a very good one.
Excellent.
That we need to have that discussion around that too.
It's a sound question that a lot of people are trying to solve that issue for both sides of the government. And it's a taxing issue, not an easy one to solve, but it's one that both Board of Ed and Board of Selectmen feel is an important issue. And quite honestly, personally, it really is, we have to solve that issue or our school system will fail.
Yeah, I mean, the state keeps mandating more and more for us.
Even with the state having this stupid system of not allowing you to significantly reduce your budget. It is what it is. And if you, let's just say we did a lot of things. State would not allow us to bring it down below a certain level, period.
Right.
No reason for it, just because they have more power than you do as a taxpayer.
I mean, I'm at the senior center most afternoons, and I see the cars that go by, and I've mentioned this to Kristen more than once. I mean, it just drives me crazy as a former school bus driver. You've got six kids on a big ass bus that were, never mind.
Since you drove, you get away with that comment.
Well, thank you.
May I add one thing here?
Sure, Bob.
When you look at it, and you make a really good point, and it's a very difficult one to solve. But when you look at the total number of students and everything, and given the overall situation statewide, countrywide, as far as population, we're not getting the type of replacement population that we've been used to for many, many years. And people who study demographics have always figured that this was going to just keep going, 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 and it stuck. But when you look at the difference between, say, 2019 and now with choice students, we went from 58 to 42, that's 16 decrease, and Columbia students, 54 to 18, so for an additional 36. So much of the decrease has come from, as you pointed out, tuition-paying students. And there's a number of factors that occurred there, and I don't know what's going to change it. Since we embarked on building the high school addition and renovation, E.O. Smith got into the mixture as far as bidding for Columbia students and other and people in other towns, kids in other towns as well. And I get one other, at least one other large school was doing that as well.
Magnet School is very popular as well. Magnet School is very popular as well.
As well as VOAG schools. And the technical high schools. That's a new wrinkle that we are experiencing. With eighth graders making choices. It was just on the news the other night about how there are the population piece about, 5 years ago, you go to a four-year college or you go to a two-year college and then you go to a four-year college and you get a degree or you go to the military or you go to work. And now it's more of you go to a technical school of some kind and you learn a skill or a trade and you can come out and make $85,000, $90,000 and you don't have 4 years of college debt. And the pandemic really created a great light on that situation, which we are all experiencing.
And the same thing, I think you certainly appreciate, and I do, and I think most people in this town do, that we have, and thanks for Kristen Heck's leadership, we have just a terrific schools, and they produce world-class students, and it's, I think it's still, it wasn't for me 40 some odd years ago, although I'd been in town previously, a huge drawing card because we were going to have a family and couldn't be happier that my kids were brought up here and attended Bolton schools.
We got to keep it that way.
Yeah, and we will struggle and do the very best we can. All three boards were, or what committee and two boards, to keep that going. I think it's really important, and it's really important to the property values, and it is attraction for people to move here. So it's a very valuable asset. We've got to do our best to maintain it.
One last, if I may, Mr. Chair, one last thing. It goes beyond just our town, and one of the issues of population, school population, obviously, is a number of household populations diminishing. Well, that's okay, but somewhat stable now. But one of the things that I've always looked at, and because our school system has been extremely successful for the students that go here, the state of Connecticut, if they wanted to, could allow students the choice of going to Manchester School or Bolton School, Rockville School or Bolton School, vice versa. If that were the situation, and this is where we don't have any control on it, but the voting public does, and your legislators and the people you put up there, is about time the state of Connecticut allows student populations to move to where they are best suited, and the funds to follow. I would guarantee if that were in place, this school system would be at max, not where it is today. And I'll get off my horse, because I keep...
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point, though, because a lot of the, what we're challenged with, we're basically dependent on the federal and state governments and how they do business. And so some part of what we're talking about is how do we get out there and at least start lobbying our state legislators better, you know, on some of these topics. And again, this is like a multi-part challenge dealing with, you know, with schools. It's really, you know, that's all I can say with it. It's something that we do need to have that conversation about, though.
I don't say anymore, I'm just going to get in trouble.
No, Rhea, do you have a comment?
I think there was a letter.
And he spoke.
Tie up the horse.
Any other questions? I'm looking, oh, no, that's my own cursor. Any questions online? I'm not seeing any other questions in the room. And I am not seeing any either. So what I will do is going once, going twice, going thrice, and then I will entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
So I have a motion by Bob Moore and a second by Bob Monroe to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries by all members of the Finance Committee present. And again, I just do want to thank all of you for being here, whether you're online or in person.
I personally want to thank you